Even if you're not a big fan of measurements like IQ, intelligence quotient, you may have wondered if it's really possible to ramp up the workings of our brains. Can we do more with the stuff we've got? Can we turn that 3 pounds of tapioca into a really vibrant 3 pounds of tapioca? These are questions today's guest approaches in his book. Dan Hurley is the author of Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power, which takes a look at current findings on brains and how they can be used and figures out how he can use them on himself. Dan Hurley is a science journalist, the author of several books and articles on intelligence for the New York Times Magazine, The Washington Post, and Neurology Today. He's featured in the PBS documentary Smarter Brains, and he's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dan Hurley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So you, one of the things you mentioned in your introduction is intelligence has a brand problem in business speak. What does that mean?
Everybody hates IQ. my brother, when he found out that I was going to be writing about this, he sends me an email going, "Hey, Mr. Schmarty, how about instead of getting smarter, getting nicer? I'd rather have Mr. Rogers in my neighborhood than, you know, some mad genius." And certainly, forever, you know, there was this book that was written almost 30 years ago called The Bell Curve, in which, a lot of people got very upset that it was looking at this relationship, this so-called relationship between race and IQ. And, you know, that really made the whole subject of IQ just so politically incorrect. And a lot of ugly things have been claimed in the name of, you know, quote-unquote science. And, you know, what I'm interested in is probably what, you know, what all of us are interested in, is dealing with life better, understanding things better, getting it, and being able to solve life's problems. And that all takes, you know, whatever it is that goes on in between our ears. And if that thing can work better, I think everybody would like that. And I really tried to steer away from this whole the uglier side of IQ. And you know, another part of that is that because IQ has always been painted as this permanent thing that you can't do anything about, you're tested once and that's it, you're done, that's your number. And that just seems so weird. I mean, there's almost nothing else in life that, you know, you can't do anything about. I mean, you can, even if you're a male today, you could become a female, right? You can change so many things about yourself. And most of us want to believe in the possibility of, you know, human potential. And so if you can raise IQ or whatever intelligence is, that changes the whole nature of the discussion and opens it up into something just like the rest of our body. And why shouldn't we be able to increase our brain power if, after all, the brain is in your body? So we can do things with the rest of our body. It seems crazy that you wouldn't be able to do something about your intelligence.
When you put it that way, it really does kind of jump out at you. I mean, the fact is that, I mean, most of us believe we couldn't get fit enough to get into the Olympics, but we could get in much better shape and make parts of our body nice and tight and
absolutely.
And all. And so why do we seem to work on this idea that, what you got started with is what you're going to finish with?
It's just so untrue from so many perspectives. I mean, one thing that's really clear from, and that basically no experts question, is that getting more physically fit at any age improves your cognitive abilities. So if you've got someone who can barely, you know, an elderly person who can barely get up out of their chair and shuffle across the room, those people, if they start doing some basic exercises, especially, you know, for those older folks who are able to join, say, a water fitness group where they're just in the pool and moving around a bit. These things don't just affect your body. I think most scientists do accept now that the brain is, there is this neck, and it appears to be connected to the rest of the body.
What do you know?
At least I've always thought so.
Well, you know, while we're talking about exercise, I mean, do smarter people ultimately end up living longer?
Well, there are a lot of things about intelligence that are surprising, that they end up generally living longer. They're probably going to do better in their career on average. These are averages. It's like smoking and lung cancer. Most people who smoke do not get lung cancer, but you know, smoking is not going to be good for you. And having a higher intelligence, being smarter, if you will, is generally going to be a good thing for you in many ways.
We will dive a lot deeper into the brain with Dan Hurley's help. His book is Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. Back with Dan and your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is science journalist Dan Hurley. He's written a book called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. And rather than take scientists' word for it, Dan Hurley put himself through paces and adopted a lot of the techniques that are recommended for increasing brain power to come up with some observations of his own. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about intelligence and whether it actually can be increased. What do you think? 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dan, in your words, the skeptical bastard in you required a different sort of approach to this book. What is that approach?
Well, you know, it's one thing to say, gee, it seems ridiculous that you couldn't increase your intelligence just by thinking about it. But I wanted to see hard evidence in randomized clinical trials. Just to give a perspective on how skeptical I am, my first science book was about dietary supplements and the evidence about them, and did include a lot of skeptical, evidence that says a lot of these things don't work, some of them are dangerous, and so I am by nature a guy that, and I did live in Missouri for 2 years,
the show me
state. Job. Yeah. So basically, I started looking at the clinical trials. I traveled all around the country, meeting with researchers. I spoke with many researchers in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, since 2008, there have been about 75 randomized, placebo-controlled trials where they were testing people's cognitive abilities before and after an intervention, and after, they were doing better. And some of them found, not all. There's different parts of your cognitive abilities. Some of them are what's called working memory, which is your ability to juggle facts in your mind while you're sitting there, like doing mental arithmetic, keeping track of multiple streams of information at the same time.
As distinct, though, from short-term memory, is that right?
Yeah, short-term memory is, I'm going to read you a list of numbers, or I'm going to read you a list of animals, and then you're going to tell me what those were immediately back. You're just going to spit it back to me. Working memory is more like how much is 17 times 3? Where you have to actually do something with what you're thinking about. You're not just remembering it, you're you're playing with that information in some way, but it requires you to kind of shuffle the information back and forth in your mind and sort of, you know, well, I'm going to multiply the 7 by 3 right now, and I'm not going to be noticing the 1 over there, and then I've got to back. So if you get the idea, it's a little hard to describe, but it's more, you know, how do you understand a sentence as it's going on, not just listen to the words, but understand it. So this is what our brain is doing all the time. And this is really, it's really a much more important aspect than, say, where did I leave the keys? As annoying as where did I leave the keys it can be, it's something you can figure out. Whereas if you can no longer balance your checkbook, if you can no longer get to the store and figure out, you know, just the simplest things, this is where life starts really falling apart for you. And on the other side of the coin, the more you are able to discern things and figure things out and get to the heart of a matter, that's where you know, you can really start succeeding in life more powerfully.
Okay, so we figured out working memory is the important stuff, which accounts for some of the absent-minded professor stereotypes.
Absolutely.
We have over the years, because, you know, they might forget where their keys are, but they're just brilliant in other areas because their working
exactly.
memories are so good. And then another term I want to bring onto the table here so we understand it before we move ahead is fluid intelligence.
Right. So working memory and fluid intelligence are really closely related. Fluid intelligence is, these are terms that cognitive psychologists define. Basically, it's what fluid intelligence is, what we think of when we think of that person is really smart. It's the ability, and it sounds a lot like working memory, but it's a little more complex. It's more about pattern, detecting subtle patterns. So if you've ever seen these puzzles where there's a little grid, and it's a 3x4 grid of little symbols, and you can see that there's one dot at the top, then there's two dots, then there's three dots, and there's four dots. There's one little square, there's two little squares, there's three little squares. There's one little triangle, there's two little triangles. And what's the last one? Oh, gee, it must be three little triangles, right? Obviously. Well, there are versions of that that get so complicated that when I look at them, you almost burst out laughing going, they're goofing on me, right? this can't possibly be. There's no sense to that. And you look up, down, backwards, forwards, from, you know, a mirror view, anything, and you can't find it. So it's kind of like the way when you're talking to your dog, and your dog understands the tone, but the dog doesn't really understand what the heck you're saying, right? I mean, only in the in the movies can you say, Fido, go get me the paper, and then get me the, you know, buy me a breakfast burrito at Dunkin' Donuts and come back. They don't get that because it's just beyond them. So this ability to discern patterns is really fundamental in life, and the more you think about it, it's really what so much of intelligence is about.
Dan Hurley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Michael in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Hurley, I'd like to ask you, and I hope I'm not off point here, but are you familiar with Dr. Carl Priebum from Stanford's research on the holographic brain and how it relates to the holographic universe? And does any of his research have any bearing on your research? And, of course, I can take my answer off the air on that.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. I've heard about this notion of a holographic universe. I'm not familiar with that researcher, and I'm not familiar with this notion of a holographic brain. There is such a vast body of research in this field. I spent the better part of 2 years devoting myself to this, and nobody would ever be able to meet all the players in this field.
There are that many, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing of it is that, first of all, if you have kids who are learning disabled, that's a huge group, right? If you have elderly people who are developing dementia, there's another whole group of researchers working on that. If you have someone with Down syndrome, there's another group working on that. There's these devices called transcranial direct current stimulation, very, very low dose electricity, like from a 9-volt battery being applied to a certain part of your skull to improve functioning. This is another whole group of researchers. There's people working on medications. There's people working on brain games. There's people working on exercise. There's people working on music as a means to increase cognitive abilities. So it's a really complicated landscape of research.
Let's talk about some of the other names you mentioned in the book, Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. Torkel Klingberg is not a household name. What was his hypothesis?
Torkel Klingberg basically came up with this idea of training working memory. He was the first person to give that a shot. And, excuse me, I have a bit of a cough. And he published a study that said, well, if you train kids working memory, you can reduce their ADHD and you can increase their fluid intelligence. And people looked at that study and said, that's crazy. That can't be true. Because there was a real dogma in the 90s and in the, you know, even into the 21st century here that said intelligence cannot be increased. We've tried it every which way. We can't do it. It's impossible. Forget about it. So when his study came out, there was a lot of skepticism. And a group originally from Switzerland, now in the U.S., Susan Yockey and Martin Bushko, they tried to replicate it, and they found the same thing. They basically trained working memory in a group of college students and found dramatic increases in fluid intelligence. And since then, there have been about 22 studies showing the same thing.
Now, you did spend some time with Yockey and Bushkul. So how big a deal was their finding, and what kind of paces did they put you through?
I'm sorry. Their findings set off a bit of an academic war. Some very prominent researchers thought that they were out of their minds and publicly lambasted them at scientific meetings, published paper after paper trying to discredit their work. To hear this group of skeptics, you would think that the whole field is nonsense. The New Yorker ran an article about a blog about one of this group's papers early last year, and concluded that the whole field is quote unquote bogus, based on essentially a few papers by arch skeptics. Meanwhile, hundreds and hundreds of other researchers continue to find effects. Like I say, there are 75 placebo-controlled randomized trials published showing that all sorts of things can increase substantially your cognitive abilities. It's funded by the Office of Naval Research. DARPA does some funding of it. IARPA, which is the Intelligence Advanced Research group, it's funded by NIH. There's a great deal of very, there are just so many really sober, skeptical as me, scientists who have found that this stuff works. So there's still lots of debate. I mean, how much you can do it, what's the exact best way, who should do it, how long they should do it. Lots of questions remain. This is early days for the field. But the notion that intelligence cannot be increased, that should really be, you know, buried and, you know, a memorial given for that.
So, again, when you got to get together with Professors Yockey and Bushkuhl, what did they have you do? What tests
well,
did you take?
Well, they have this very evil task called the NBAC, which, so if I say A, B, C, D, E, and I ask you, and I stop, and I say, what was the letter that I said 3 times ago? But the letters I'm reading are random. So I'm going C, F, G, K, L. And every time I repeat the same letter 3 times ago or 4 times ago or 2 times ago, depending on which level you're at, you're supposed to press a button. It's mind-boggling. It sounds easy. But if you try it, there's a website called soakyourhead. I think it's either .com or .org, mm-hmm. and they have a free version. It's really most people just look at it and scream and want to throw their computer across the room.
It's that hard.
It's really hard.
You do mention.
But what's crazy though is that you get better at it the moment. So once you get through that, oh, this is awful moment, and you stick with it, you start getting it. And I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
As you go forward, I mean, I got up to 5 back, being able to do 5 back, and actually doing what's called a dual end back, where you're looking both at where is in a little cube, a grid where a square is lighting up randomly in various spots. you know what? May I take a break and get a glass of water?
Go ahead. I'll give a reintroduction back to the audience and let folks know what we're talking about here. So take a few seconds here. We're talking to science journalist Dan Hurley. His book is Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. It's really about issues like, can we extend our intelligence to the point where we could actually bump our IQ numbers up? This is a conversation you can join on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, our local number is 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And as you've heard, Dan Hurley did, in fact, put himself through a bunch of tests, not just the dual NBAC test, to figure out if he could, in fact, increase his own intelligence. And the website he mentioned a few moments ago is soakyourhead.com. Which does provide the dual NBAC test, and it's the way he describes it in the book. It sounds really difficult. Danny, back with us yet?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I hope you're feeling better. So we were talking about the dual NBAC test. I did mention soakyourhead.com. Apparently, there's lots of tests available online. You could do just about anything online to gauge your own intelligence, then figure out how to start expanding it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take seriously most of these online IQ tests. They're mostly come-ons to join something. I underwent a long series. Bushkuhl and Yockey gave me a bunch of tests before I started my training regimen, and then again 4 months later. And I took a fluid one called the basically like a matrix exam, a matrix test, where you're trying to figure out what are these patterns that, as I described, and many other of these really awful cognitive tests. So, and for me, after 3.5 months of training, I increased my fluid intelligence, according to these tests, by 16%.
16%. All right. Much more to talk about the process of getting there. We can give you another break here. The Smarter, the New Science of Building Brain Power is the book. Dan Hurley is the author and our guest. We have a couple of phone calls waiting, quite a few now, in fact, it turns. We'll come back and talk more with Dan Hurley and take your phone calls and emails when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is science journalist Dan Hurley. He was asking the question, can you actually increase your intelligence? Can you boost your IQ number? The search for an answer led to the creation of the book Smarter, the New Science of Building Brain Power. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, many lines open. You can also reach us by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So the last thing you said before the break was you were actually able to increase your fluid intelligence 16%. Is that an outlier? Is that sort of in the middle of the range that these researchers are finding? Or
that seems relatively modest. Mm-hmm. I mean, according to most of the studies, and one problem I had is that the people that gain the most usually start off more at the lower end, right? So obviously, if you're going to be a science journalist, you better have some level of mental ability. Even though, strangely enough, when I was a kid, I was called a slow learner, and I didn't learn to read until third grade.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. old story, parents going through divorce, lot of upheaval, and nobody read to me as a kid. I didn't get all those kinds of things. And it wasn't until basically my best friend discovered Spider-Man comic books, and he became obsessed with them, and then I became obsessed with them. And we both started writing our own comics and drawing our own comics. And, you know, all I can say is by sixth grade I had straight A's and, you know, was on my way. So I don't know if Spider-Man is a a cognitive treatment, but, that was one thing that always in the back of my mind I've wondered what happened there. Was I already smart in third grade and just didn't get enough support at home, or did finally getting really exposed to comic books and reading and all those big words that Stan Lee, the writer of those comics, would throw in, did that actually expand my mind? I don't know, but I definitely believe from that it's possible for people who were labeled a slow learner or whatever they call it these days to be able to move forward and expand their abilities.
Let's take a call. We have Dennis in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Hurley, the author of Smarter.
Thanks for taking my call. Okay, here's my question. If you have five people who are of all equal intelligence, let's say they're Mensas, and they all have a intelligence level of, 130 or something, for just something to say.
Okay.
And you teach all five of them to play poker for 1 week, and then you have them play poker on their own for 1 week. Will one of those people be better and win more often than the other four?
Why do you choose poker as the benchmark?
Why'd I use poker?
Yeah.
Because Mensas love to play poker.
Oh, okay. It's good to know. Well, let's see what Dan has to say.
You know, I think So here's the thing. Obviously, someone's going to do better than others, right? The thing of it is about those kind of specific skills is that until this research started coming out in 2008, people thought that you could only teach a specific skill, and they never transferred to broad ability. So, and there was, you know, Malcolm Gladwell made famous some research showing that you could teach memory tricks to a person who had no prior ability, and you could get them to remember a list of numbers, of random numbers, up to 100 numbers in a row, right? You could get them to this extraordinary level. And yet, if you ask them now to remember a list of letters, they couldn't do it. No better than normal, because they had developed a special, specific skill. And the same way, it's been shown that, you know, if you teach this, people don't suddenly get better at that. So what's interesting about these kinds of training methods, working memory training methods, physical exercise, things like this, is that they seem to have broad effect in much of your life. Now, you know, nobody is saying that you would do, say, the NBAC for a week and suddenly be a master at chess. You still got to learn how to play chess. There's no question. You still got to learn how to play poker. But you're going to be faster at learning. This improves your, you know, one of the definitions of intelligence is how good are you at learning new material, right? Why do smarter people do better in school? Because they learned it faster. They learned it more easily. And so I would say that if you give these kinds of training methods to a group of anybody, yeah, they should be all better at doing a lot of things. Will they all specifically be better at poker? Who knows? Will they all be equally better at poker? You know, that's getting, you know, we're getting down into the details that I don't think anyone has reached yet. This is, again, as I said, a new area of science where people are, you know, really just getting going.
Let's go to Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Hurley. His book is Smarter.
I'm waiting for somebody to use the word wise. Very simple word. Are they able to use all this in groups? There's a T-shirt out that says, what is it, same, blah, blah, blah. I work well with others as long as they leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the point is that when I'm working with young people, and they will, especially history or something that's a little more, you know, I say IQ, I question, are you sure that that is what happened, just because a book says it and whatever? That's what I think is missing. I have a little saying, Lord, deliver me from a college graduate with a computer making a decision for me 500 miles away. Yeah.
You know, listen, so two things about that. One is that, you know, even though we like to diss intelligence, and talk about things like emotional intelligence and determination. You know, there's a lot of determined characters out there in the world with discipline and determination and, you know, good values and good judgment who have done amazing things in the world, right? So intelligence is not, by any stretch, everything. It's not even, you know, it might not even be the most important thing, but it is something that is valuable. And it's related to those other things. You know, you just have one brain, and it's all interconnected. And so your ability to regulate your emotions is actually closely related to your ability to control your thoughts and think through things. The other side of that, you add wisdom, is that I would love to find out about how to increase wisdom. That is something that people, you know, I was a philosophy and English composition major in college, and wisdom is, you know, that's the ultimate, right? And the problem with psychology right now is they don't even know how to define it. There's a small group of people who are beginning to tinker with it and try to get some hold on it. But, you know, 100 years ago, intelligence was a hard concept to understand. Emotions were very hard. People didn't know what depression was. Consciousness, 30 years ago, nobody even thought that was a significant subject. Now there's a great deal of research. So psychology has been slowly moving toward getting a grip on these very slippery subjects. But I agree, it's really important. And just because they're hard doesn't mean that science should not move forward and try to help, because Lord knows we all would like to be wiser.
Let's talk about some of the things that ended up in your toolbox, or at least considered for your toolbox, in trying to increase your working memory, your fluid intelligence. We had first-person shooter games show up in here, the relationships between diet and intelligence, coffee, yeah, music and intelligence, and nicotine, and I'll stop at that list. But so let's go back to first-person shooter games. What's the effect there?
Well, so even the military uses these games to train pilots shooting. You know, if you're a pilot, you're going to be in these virtual reality games where you are learning to use this stuff. It's been shown that these kinds of things improve the ability of elderly drivers to see the road all around them. It's called useful field of view. You know, the driver who classically says, oh, that car came out of nowhere, but, you know, a younger person would have noticed it. So those might not seem like, quote-unquote, intelligence, but, you know, they are important. I mean, it's your brain that's doing it. It's cognitive functioning. So those first-person shooter games have been shown to improve all sorts of interesting abilities and cognitive functions that have nothing to do with, you know, pulling a trigger on, you know, an attacking zombie or something.
Right. Okay.
You know, at least we can all be, you know, glad. We can be comforted that all the teenagers in the world who got their military video games this Christmas, that they're not all just ruining their minds. Perhaps to some small degree, they're getting some help. Other things, though, you know, there's this thing we all hear about, Lumosity, on the radio. They advertise on NPR.
Right, Garrison Keillor mentioned it this morning, yes. Mm-hmm.
There are games on there that are useful. I trained on Lumosity. I visited their offices. Those are serious fellows. It's a group of people that are really trying to make a difference. Obviously, they're in business. I don't think all of their games have been shown to help. Some of them, I think, are there just to make people feel good, but that they're improving on something. But it's certainly, I think, much more useful than, say, just doing the crossword puzzle every day. You know, people that think that they're exercising their mind by going to that part of the newspaper where there's the crossword or Sudoku or these other things, those do not seem to have much of an effect. You know, in part because you're just doing the same thing over and over and over and over. What everything has been... The big thing that is necessary is to be doing something that's increasingly difficult. So whether you're doing the NBAC, Lumosity, other working memory challenges, physical exercise, learning a musical instrument, it should be challenging. It should be something you're not used to, something that you thought you couldn't do, and you should be continually challenged so that as you get better, it gets harder.
Now, I noticed that that I would have expected the same thing I think you went expecting, which is that there should be a pile of studies about the effects of diet on intelligence. And what did you find?
There's not much. You know, we've all heard of things like fish is brain food and vitamins and, oh, you should do this and that. And there is almost nothing really substantial. One study came out just lately that said the Mediterranean diet might be better. I mean, listen, we all know, if you're healthier, that's going to affect your brain, right? So we know that. But, you know, part of what I was looking for were practical things that I or anyone could give a shot to it, and see if it works. I didn't want to do something like you have to learn a foreign language because, you know, it takes a year at least or more to learn a foreign language. I mean, if I'm going to have to do that, you know, that isn't something really practical. And turning your own diet upside down in the hope of getting smarter, I think what I looked at was practical things that anyone can do.
And it got him to 16% above his old baseline. That was the finding of Dan Hurley in his book, Smarter, the New Science of Building Brain Power. Dan, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Tomorrow on the Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about new driver's ed rules in Oregon. You can actually skip the driving test in some cases. Then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to the author of Affluenza about how our desire for stuff makes our lives a little less meaningful. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer, Charlotte Dern, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening and have a great day.